some things that a Nazarene carpenter said over 2,000 years ago are still current in our conversation today. And very often we are unaware that that's where the things that we say have come from. I noticed in an interview with the American country singer Faith Hill, someone asked her about her family when she was growing up, what they were like and who they were and so on. And in response to that question, she said this: "I have a wonderful family. My parents are church-going, salt of the earth, southern people. They gave me a lot of love and are so unaffected by fame." When she was asked to talk about her family, she described her parents as salt of the earth. Jesus said that. That's where that phrase comes from. It was his. He said to his disciples on one occasion, he said, "You are the salt of the earth." And when we use that expression, as we sometimes do in life, that's where it comes from. Jesus said to his disciples, "You are the salt of the earth." And he coupled that with another metaphor, another picture. He said, "You are the light of the world." The few verses in which these metaphors are reported by Matthew, we read them a moment or two ago, Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 to 16, they follow immediately after the Beatitudes. And like the Beatitudes, as we discovered last Sunday, these pictures that Jesus gives here constitute another moment of epiphany. They are another aha moment. We learn something here about who Jesus is and about who he is calling us to be. Something significant is locked up in these two simple pictures, something we badly need to understand. Why? Because in these pictures, we have two things. The first thing we have is an announcement. An announcement. Jesus is making an announcement. It's not about the BB or the GB, or it's not about the voters list for Carn Money. It's not about any of the things we normally make announcements about in church. And in this announcement, we need to get something. Because you see, it's really easy to rush to try to figure out the significance of salt and light and miss something more important than that in what Jesus says here. What we sometimes do in church and even in our own lives when we come to this passage in Matthew chapter 5, is something like this. Okay, so you have a really wealthy relative. I know you probably don't, but let's pretend for a moment that you have a really wealthy relative and they die, and you are asked to come along to the reading of the will. And so you gather there, and everything is very kind of quiet and sustained and hushed because you really regret that this relative of yours has died, but you're also pretty interested to hear in the bit that's coming next. And so the executor of the will reads through the will, and at one point then he looks at you and he says, "Your uncle has left you £1 million. Yeah, that would be a moment, wouldn't it? And what we sometimes do with Jesus telling us that we're salt and light, you would do the same thing in that instant. If you heard the executor say, "Your uncle has left you £1 million, and then you started to think, "I wonder, will it come in a check? Or maybe it'll be a bank transfer, or maybe it'll be like one of those things that happen in the movies. He'd have a suitcase and he'll open it up and it'll be full of £1 million in £20 notes. And suddenly your mind starts going off on all those things, when of course none of those things are important at all. What is actually important is that the inheritance is yours. You have just come into something amazing. And whether you get it in a check or a bank transfer or on a suitcase in £20 notes really doesn't matter. The point you're supposed to get here is that you have come into an inheritance. And when we hear Jesus say these words, "You are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world," we are inclined, first of all, to think more about the salt and the light bit of what he said. So let's do that first and get it out of the way, okay? Salt is seasoning. Now, what I have to tell you here is I am about to do one of those things my family say I do all the time, which is talk authoritatively about things I know nothing about. Salt is seasoning, okay? And if, like me, the closest I get to any real cooking is watching MasterChef. And if you watch MasterChef, you'll recognize this guy, John Torrode, or I'm not quite sure how you pronounce his name, but anyway, if you ever watch MasterChef, you'll know that he and his partner will get people into a competition room and they'll prepare and cook some food and then they'll sample the food and they'll make comments on it, okay? It's a good job he's never in the kitchen in our house on the odd occasion I cook. But anyway, so they make comments on it, all right? And I have noticed that something he frequently says when he likes the taste of the dish that has just been brought to him, he will often say, and compliment the food by saying that food was well seasoned, okay? It was well seasoned. In other words, they got the salt and pepper right. And that's a big deal on the MasterChef program. Seasoning is a big deal. In fact, 3,000 years before MasterChef was ever broadcast on the television, a Greek author called Homer wrote a book which is called the Iliad. And any of you who were disadvantaged to have to do classical languages at school may remember the Iliad by Homer. It tells a story of a journey that takes place. But also as part of telling the story of the journey, it refers on a number of occasions to the food which the hero of the story cooked and ate. And in his book, written 3,000 years ago, he mentions seasoning meat with salt. So the idea of seasoning food with salt goes back over a long period of time. One modern expert has said that salt may be used to draw out water or to magnify a natural flavor of a food, making it richer or more delicate, depending on the dish. So there you are. I don't even know what that means. But anyway, salt, that's what it can do. And when Jesus says to his disciples, you are the salt of the earth, what Jesus is saying is that those who live the life that he described in the Beatitudes, the life that is blessed by God and that is a blessing to others, those who live that life are seasoning. The life that they live is a kind of seasoning in the world. It draws out what is still good in the creation which God made. You are the salt of the earth, Jesus says. So that life, the life lived in the kingdom of God by the values of the kingdom, the life that is blessed and that is a blessing to others, that life is the salt of the earth. Now, we all marvel at David Attenborough and the succeeding series of programs that he has made. Because often as we watch those programs, we learn things about the natural world that we never know, that we didn't know before. It's far more intricate, far more involved, far more structured, far more amazing than we ever thought. And by the time he has finished his next series, we will be in awe and wonder of loads of ordinary things all around us just because of what he does. He helps us to appreciate that world. But Jesus says that if you really want to taste the wonder of life on earth, you should be able to do that in the lives of the people who are in his kingdom. You are the salt of the earth. You, by the life that you live, the life that is blessed by God and that is a blessing to others, by living that life, you are like salt in food. You bring out all the amazing things about the world that people don't normally observe. Jesus also says that those who live the life which is blessed and that is a blessing are the light of the world. It's not an entirely new idea. If you use the Bible in 1 year, yesterday you will have read from Proverbs chapter 4 as one of the three readings set for yesterday. And in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 18, there were these words: the path of the righteous is like the morning sun, shining ever brighter till the full light of day. Hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus said to his disciples, "You are the light of the world," the wise man who gathered together the sayings in the book of Proverbs is saying that people who live the life of God's kingdom are like bright shining lights. And whenever Paul wants to talk about how the young believers in Philippi will look to their contemporaries, he describes them like this. He says, "You will shine among them like stars in the sky." So this idea that Jesus has, that people who are in the kingdom are a light to the world, it's not only his idea. It's there before him. It's there after him. So what is it that matters about light? If salt is seasoning that brings out the flavors of the food, what does light do? Well, light enables sight. You can't see without light. Jesus said, "Let your light shine before others that they may see." That's what light does. I was writing this sermon last evening at my desk at home. In front of me, I got a laptop, okay. Beside me, I've got a series of notes that I've taken during the week while I've been checking up commentaries and reflecting and thinking about the text. And so to be able to type on the keyboard on my computer, I don't need a light because the keyboard's illuminated and the screen is bright. But to read my notes beside me, I need a light on the desk to shine on them. That's not me, obviously. Wish it was, but it's not. But you see, the light shines on the notes and enables you to read what you have learned, and then you can compose on the keypad. The light helps you see. And that is what Jesus is saying about a kingdom life, about a life that is lived according to the values and principles of the kingdom of God. A kingdom lifestyle enables people to taste and to see things they would not otherwise taste and things they would not otherwise see about God and his kingdom. King David once wrote these words, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." And when Jesus says to his disciples, "You are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world," what is he saying? He's saying people will taste and see that the Lord is good when they taste and see the lives of people in the kingdom of God. Now, who are these people? Jesus says to his disciples, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." How will people taste and see that the Lord is good? Answer to the question, through you. That's Jesus' plan. That's his only strategy. The only way to taste and see the reality of the kingdom of God is to taste and see it in the lives of his people, day by day, in ordinary situations in the world. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. You are those things. Not the leadership of the church. Not people who have a theological degree. Not this, that, or other group of specialists of one sort or another, but just you and me, just us all as we are. We are these things. Christine was saying when she came home from work on Friday that they had lunch together, and over lunch the conversation came round, as sometimes it does at work. You know, a conversation came round to church and what's the difference between churches and why, you know, why have we got all these different denominations and what are they all about and why do they do this and some others do that and so on. And the conversation came round, and amongst the things they ended up talking about complicated things like Martin Luther and so on, which is really quite amazing. And of course, the conversation, my wife said to them, "Oh, it would be better if John was here. He could tell you more about this." But of course, it wouldn't have been. Yeah, I could have told them more about Martin Luther and John Calvin and all the rest of that stuff, spend plenty of time studying it and teaching it at Bible college. Yes, of course, I could have done all that, but that's not what Jesus is talking about here. It was much more effective for my wife to have that conversation because she works with those people all the time. And the answer to their questions wasn't so much about the knowledge and information that they could receive as the taste and the light that they could experience. You, not the experts, not the people with the theological education, not this important person or that important person or some other important person, but you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. God's only plan to change the world in which we live, to bring in the values of the kingdom, is you. Jesus is making an announcement. And his announcement is that you are the answer to the tastelessness and the darkness of this world. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Jesus makes an announcement. But then he also gives a warning. So, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. What could possibly go wrong? Well, Jesus reveals that unfortunately there is a weakness to this strategy. He says in Matthew chapter 5, if the salt loses its saltiness, and then he goes on to say, neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. The salt in the cellar seasons nothing, okay? It only seasons something when it is cooked in the food. You have to get the salt into the food so that it can do its work. And the light works not by being light, but by shining, because a light is still a light if you put it under a bucket. Okay, you probably wouldn't normally do that, but it would still be a light if you put the bucket over it. But it couldn't work, because to work, the light has to be able to shine. Put it under a bucket, and it's useless. And there's the weakness of the strategy. The salt needs to be in the food. The light needs to shine so people can see it. Craig Keener, in his commentary, says this: a disciple of the kingdom who does not live like a disciple of the kingdom is worth about as much as tasteless salt or invisible light. To be salt and to be light, we have to be embedded in the world. Isn't that what God did? He took his son, his one and only son, and he birthed him as a human child. He became incarnate. Jesus became embedded in the world. And it was through being embedded in the world that we got to see and to hear. We got to taste and to see who he was and what he came to do. And basically in these verses, Jesus is saying to his disciples, I need you to do the same. It's not as big a step for you because you were already here. Me, I had to come from eternity. I had to become incarnate in human flesh. You're already there, so you're partway there already. I need you to be embedded in the world just as I was. When Eugene Peterson translates what Jesus says about letting our light shine, this is how he translates it. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. The problem is that if we are to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world, then we need to be in contact with people. We need to live our lives where people can taste and see who we are and what we do. Whenever I was a teenager at school, as a young Christian, looking for influences and those who could mentor me in my life, two school teachers became really significant to me. The irony of it was neither of them ever taught me at school. One of them didn't even teach in the school I went to. The other one did. But although the other one taught in my school, I wasn't in any of his classes. So how on earth were two people, one of whom didn't teach in the school I went to, and the other who took none of the classes that I attended, become such a significant influence in my life? Because those two young men were not from Londonderry, where I lived. They came from elsewhere, and they stayed in a flat in the city, one teaching in one school, one in the other. And what they used to do was they used to invite us round to their flat for Bible study each week. And we would be welcome there. There was hospitality for us there. And we would go along there and we would study the Bible with them, and we would begin to get to understand what God was speaking into our lives through that. And then they started up a book club. I mean, I know you wouldn't do this anymore. Nobody ever reads anymore. But I grew up a generation where books were the only media that was around, okay? And they started up a book club and encouraged us to begin to read some of the books that had been influential in their lives. And then not only so, but they began to cajole us and encourage us towards becoming evangelists, towards our friends at school. And they prayed with us for those friends. They did exactly what Eugene Peterson says in his translation of this verse. They kept open house. They were generous with their lives. And by opening up to us, they enabled us to open up to God and to make more steps in the Christian life and to hear God's call and God's confirmation upon our own lives because of how those two school teachers lived. They lived open, generous lives. The problem for us is if we are to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world, then we have to be close enough to be tasted and seen. You know, it's a bit like if one day, if it's a nice day and you go for a long walk on the beach, okay, and there's a wind blowing off the sea. When is there ever not a wind blowing off the sea in Northern Ireland? Come on. You go for a long walk on one of your favorite beaches, okay. Do you ever notice sometimes when you get back to the car in the car park and get in, if you lick your lips, they're salty? Because the salt borne on the air blowing off the sea is deposited on your lips. It wouldn't have happened if you'd stayed in the car in the car park. For that to happen, you had to get out and you had to walk the beach. You had to be near the waves as they came in. You had to feel the wind in your face. And isn't that what Jesus is saying here? That you can't be salt and you can't be light if you don't get close enough to people. Because what's the biggest danger in this strategy that Jesus has? The biggest danger is that we should live an insipid life or a hidden life. That we should live a life in the world that is connected to that which is going on around us, but that has become so like the rest of that life that it's insipid and it provides no taste. There's nothing distinctive, nothing that stands out, nothing that speaks about the values of another kingdom and the life of another world. Our lives are insipid. Or our lives are hidden. We are believers, but we never say. We never take the opportunities that come to us to share something about our own lives with other people. We don't open our homes. We don't live generously. Nobody hardly knows. And you cannot be the salt of the earth and you cannot be the light of the world if your life is insipid or hidden. It only works if you are tasteable and visible to those who are around you. When we are around, life is meant to feel larger, deeper, more worthwhile to the people we share that life with, because the life of the kingdom of God, by the power and presence of the Spirit of God, is within us. And because it is within us, and because we live this life to the values of that kingdom, we become the salt of the earth and the light of the world. When we are around, people should see some things which come from another world, and they should come to long for that world and the Lord whose world it is. A few months ago, a man came to faith after the 9:30 service. One Sunday morning, he came to faith directly as a result of a word that someone had given and that I shared at the end of the service, and this man felt that that word was for him. He's been going through a tough place in his life. The early onset of dementia means that some days are better than others for him and some days are more confusing than others for him. But on that day, on that morning, his mind was clear. He heard the word and he knew that word was for him. And he came at the end of the service in floods of tears and gave his life to Christ. And I had a conversation with him afterwards one day when he was clear enough in mind to have a conversation. And I said, well, what was the big influence that made you come? And he said, well, apart from the word that was given, he said, probably the biggest influence on my life was this. Sometimes on Saturdays, he rides with the guys who cycle from here on a Saturday morning. And he said, the biggest influence on my life was the way that Eddie and David and Michael treated me, the way they looked after me and made sure that if I went out, I got home at the end, that I knew where I was even when I didn't know where I was. And the way that they behaved towards me made me see some things that I hadn't seen and made me desire some things I hadn't desired before. What was happening? It's a bunch of ordinary guys being salt and light in their ordinary lives. And this guy saw something and it began to attract him, began to make him feel there's something going on here that I don't know about. There's a world here that I haven't experienced. There's something that I want. And all they did was rode their bikes with him, had conversation with him, made sure he got his coffee when we stopped for a break and made sure that at the end of the day, he got back home. That's all they did. Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. That's the only strategy there is. If the world is to taste and see that the Lord is good, they're only going to be able to do that through the ordinary lives of the people of the kingdom. There's a massive flaw in that strategy. The massive flaw in the strategy is that our lives should become insipid or hidden. That there is nothing tastely about them. Nothing that is bright and that shines light in such a way that they see something in our lives that speaks of another world that they don't know, but that they come to long to know. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Isn't that the challenge to you and me? In the world in which we live, the world we're going to go back to in a few minutes when this service finishes and you go home to your family, you go into work tomorrow, you stand in the queue in the supermarket, you drive your car down towards the roundabout. Isn't that the challenge? That actually the big deal that the Lord is involved in is not so much what happens here, however significant and important this moment of worship for us is at 9:30 and 11 o'clock and 6:30 and 4:30 today, however important and significant those things are, that's actually not how the world is going to be changed. The world is going to be changed when you live, when you leave here and live the life of the kingdom. Because when you live the life of the kingdom, you are the salt of the earth and the light of the world.